You open that contractor's bid and that number hits you like a wall. All that markup, where does it actually go? Today on The Awakened Homeowner, we're pulling back the curtain. You'll learn what P&O really means, why burden labor makes a $30 carpenter cost $100 on your project, and why a fair markup is actually one of the best signs you've got the right contractor. If you've ever felt blindsided by a construction bid, this is your episode. I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach. Let's dig in. Welcome to The Awakened Homeowner. Thinking about a new home or remodel, but feeling lost in a maze of decisions? You're in the right place. I'm William Reed, and for over three decades, I've coordinated the design and construction of hundreds of remodel and new home projects. I know the process can feel overwhelming, but trust me, you can do this. Here we break it all down step by step so you can feel confident, empowered, and even excited about your project. No stress, no guesswork, just the guidance you need to bring your dream home to life. Let's dive in. All right, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Awakened Homeowner, your home building coach, and I'm Bill Reed. If you've been riding along with us in the World of Construction series, you've been building up a serious foundation of knowledge, I hope, and we've talked about who general contractors are, what they actually do day to day, and the employees and the subs and the suppliers that make up their team, all that. So here's where we are now. You've done your homework. Maybe you've even started reaching out to some GC candidates, and then it happens. The bid lands in your inbox, and your first reaction is, that can't be right. I get it. I've been on the other side of that moment as the person handing a homeowner a bid and watching their face. Today, we are pulling back the curtain on how a general contractor actually makes a living, what the markup is, where it goes, and this is the part most people miss, why it's not just reasonable, it's actually worth it. By the end of this episode, you're going to look at a contractor bid very differently. So let's get into it. All right, let's start with the basics. In the construction industry, the term that describes how a general contractor makes their living is P&O, profit and overhead. You might also hear it called markup. It's really the same concept. And here's what it means. A GC marks up the cost of everything they bring to your project, the labor, the materials, the subcontractors, and the equipment. That markup is called P&O, profit and overhead. Now, before you tense up about that, I want you to hear what that markup actually covers, because this is where a lot of homeowners really go wrong. They see the total number on a bid and they think that gap between raw materials and the final price is going straight into someone's vacation fund. It really isn't. P&O covers the wages, payroll taxes, benefits, and insurance for every person on that GC's payroll. It covers the GC's own salary because they are a person with bills, a family, and a business they've built. And yes, it covers the profit that the GC needs to make in order to reinvest in their business, keep their crew employed, and stay in business long enough to finish your project. And here's a helpful framework. Every cost on your project falls into one of four buckets: labor, materials, subcontractors, and equipment, and the GC applies their P&O percentage to each one of those buckets. That's how the final bid price is built. And here's the part I really want you to take away from this segment. Markup is not just profit. This is probably the single biggest misconception homeowners carry into this process. A large portion of that markup is overhead, the operating costs of running a legitimate construction business. Licenses, insurance, office staff, vehicles, estimating time, and more. The actual net profit, the money the contractor truly takes home after all overhead expenses are paid, industry data shows averages somewhere between 1.4 and 9%, depending on the type of project and the company's size. They say that's it, and I'm not 100% sure on that. I know, honestly, that when I was operating my business, it was really important for me to generate a much higher bottom line percentage, because I would also take the responsibility of paying, honestly, for things that either went wrong or the customer expected and it wasn't clear. So I may challenge the industry standards on that, because if I made between 1.4 and 9% to the bottom line, I probably would have been out of business a long time ago. So when you see that bid and the number feels high, I want you to remember P&O is not a mystery fee. It's the business model. It's how a qualified professional stays in business long enough to see your project through to the end. So now let's talk about where some of the most understood money goes, and that's labor. If you're working with a contractor on a fixed price contract, they will estimate the labor, materials, subcontractors, equipment, and then as I mentioned, they will put their markup, the P&O on top of that. But the labor is a large percentage of a project. If you're dealing with a fixed price contract, which is where I lean towards when I operate my business and I recommend for a homeowner, the contractor themselves are assuming quite a bit of liability when it comes to allowing for enough labor for the project. And ethical contractors will not come back to a homeowner and try to charge them for additional labor because they may have misestimated something on a fixed price contract. Now, the other type of contracts are the profit and overhead or cost plus materials contract types. So two different things we're talking about today. Profit and overhead is a methodology to price out a project behind the scenes to generate a fixed price contract. But you could also contract with a contractor on a profit and overhead contract type, which means there's full transparency and that you as a homeowner assume most of the liability on whether a project goes over on labor or not. So we're going to talk about that in a whole nother episode, because that is a really, really important part that you need to understand before you enter into a contract. But what I want to talk about now is, what does labor mean? What is the actual cost of hiring a carpenter or any type of tradesperson and send them out to a project? There's a term in the construction world called burdened labor. All right, so let's talk about this, because this is where a lot of homeowners get their first real surprise. So when somebody tells you that they're making $30 an hour working for a contractor, the contractor has a lot more costs associated with that person that increases their costs on their books. So in my book, section 3.041, I talked about a concept called burden labor, and this is the actual fully loaded cost of employing a worker, and it is very different from what the person takes home in their paycheck. So here's an example from my book. Let's say a carpenter is paid $30 an hour. That's their wage, but the contractor's actual cost for that carpenter is not $30. At least for a carpenter, for at least for general contractors operating legitimately, we'll say. To employ that person, the contractor also has to pay payroll taxes, Social Security, Medicare, federal and state unemployment insurance, workers' compensation insurance, health benefits, if they're offered, vacation accrual, all of that. Those employment costs add up to roughly 35% on top of the base wage. So that $30 carpenter now costs the GC about $40.50 an hour before they've made a single dollar of profit. So you general contractors out there, you small-time guys that don't know that, you might want to watch out, because if you're only charging $30 an hour in your cost, and then you're marking up that number, you're in deep doo-doo, because you have a lot of other costs that are associated with hiring that person. But the point here is to for you as a homeowner to understand why labor costs what it does, because there's a lot of other things that go on top of the actual hourly wage. But then the GC applies their profit percentage on top of that. Depending on the GC's profit target and business model, that same carpenter might be billed to your project anywhere from $60 to $100 an hour. And that's really not padding. That's math. Now, you might be wondering, why does this matter to me as a homeowner? Well, here's the thing. If you end up with a cost plus contract, and we're going to be going over contracts in depth, like I mentioned in upcoming episodes, but you might be looking at billed hourly rates and trying to make sense of them. Knowing that burden labor exists is the key to understanding why those rates are what they are. And for fixed price contracts, this is why a contractor who underbids labor is a contractor who's going to struggle financially mid-project. When you see a bid that looks dramatically lower than everyone else's, ask yourself, did they do the labor math correctly? Because a contractor who can't cover their actual costs will look for ways to recover that money through change orders, cutting corners, or in the worst case, walking off your project, which we hear about just about every day. So understanding burden labor helps you recognize a realistic bid from an unrealistic one, and that is one of the most powerful skills you can develop as an informed homeowner. So that $30 carpenter might cost you $60 to $100 an hour on your project, and that is not really a ripoff. It's the real cost of employing a skilled tradesperson in today's market. Now, I want to call your attention to one other thing that can happen out there to you. If you have a general contractor that asks you if you'd like to pay cash for the project, what that really means is they're not running the project through their books, which means that they're not paying all of the overhead expenses that are related to their employees. So, for example, workers' compensation insurance is one of the largest overhead expenses for hiring someone, and that's the reason why they're asking for cash, which is frankly illegal, unethical, and is the first classification of a dirtbag contractor. So keep in mind, if that comes up, don't fall prey to that because you think you're going to be saving money, because what a lot of them do is they split the difference. They give you a little bit, they take a little bit, and they still charge you the hourly rate. They might give you a discount on the hourly rate. So this is rampant in this business. If a worker gets hurt on your property and turns out they do not have workers' compensation insurance, guess who gets sued and pays the bills? And that's you. So now let's look at the second major cost bucket. What happens when your GC marks up the subcontractors and suppliers on your project, and exactly what those overhead dollars are compensating for? So the markup on subcontractors and suppliers, because this is the other big piece of the picture. When your GC distributes plans to their plumber, their electrician, their framer, and all the other trade specialists, and there's a lot of them if you're building a large custom home, and even if you're doing a regular home, regular size home, or even a remodel, you could have 10, 15, 20 different subcontractors in one form or another on a project. So what a contractor does is they take their costs and they add their profit and overhead percentage on top of those bids. And so what exactly are those overhead dollars compensating for is a really big question. So section 3.042 of my book gives us a clear breakdown. And I think when you hear this list, it's going to shift the way you think about the word markup. Number one, having a qualified set of resources as part of the team. Your GC has spent years, sometimes decades, vetting, testing, and building relationships with reliable trade contractors. That network really does have real value. You don't have it, they do. The markup help compensates them for that. Number two, putting in the time needed to perform all project management responsibilities. Your GC is managing dozens of moving parts, schedules, permits, inspections, ordering materials, coordinating calls. That time is real. It doesn't happen for free, and sometimes it can be a substantial amount of time that a general contractor spends on a project that has nothing to do with wearing the bags or swinging a hammer. So number three, covering the cost of assuming liability for the team's materials and installations. So your GC is on the hook if something goes wrong. If a subcontractor's electrical work fails inspection, your GC is responsible. That liability has cost, and the markup helps cover it. Number four, covering operating costs, office expenses, vehicles, tools, software, accounting, estimating time, all of it. A construction company has real overhead before anyone ever picks up a hammer. Those costs exist whether your project is on schedule or not. And that's something you're going to want to really pay attention to when you start analyzing your bids. My previous episode with Enrique Guzman, we talked about, you know, this whole chronic getting multiple bids, meaning like six, eight, 10 bids on a project, and you're going to get costs all over the place. But what one of the things you're going to want to do is take a closer look at each company that you're considering, and especially the lower bidder that you're probably going to be attracted to see if they actually have a real legitimate company with all of these expenses. Now, there are contractors that have very low overhead, and they justify their pricing by saying, well, I don't have any overhead, or I have really low overhead, so therefore my price is going to represent that. But you may not want to, you may not want somebody that has low overhead, because you may not get what you want out of your project. They may not show up. They may not show up often enough. They may make a lot of mistakes. They may not have the supervision that's required to make sure those mistakes don't occur. They may not order materials on time because they don't have staff to help them. It goes on and on and on. To be a prudent homeowner, you really need to understand who you're dealing with, and you need to really peel back a few layers there when you look at all of the quote-unquote bidders on your project. The lowest bidding guy is either desperate, runs everything under the table, may not even have a license, and doesn't have the resources to manage the project properly. And guess who gets to pay for that one too? That's you. Another number five I'll call is delivering a completed project per the plans, specifications, and your expectations. So the markup is also the margin that allows a GC to do it right, to not cut corners, to fix mistakes properly, to deliver what you actually asked for. And number six, having the funds they need to support and grow their business. A GC who can't invest in their company will stagnate. The best GCs are always improving, better tools, better processes, better people. Your markup is part of what that makes possible. And that sounds kind of strange that you're paying for them to run their company, but that's why they exist, and that's why they're able to serve you and to serve you best. So the markup on your plumber's invoice isn't greed. It's the cost of having that plumber show up reliably, on time, coordinated properly, with their work backed by someone who is financially and professionally accountable. And remember that a contractor that charges a proper profit and overhead for a project also is financially more stable, because there's a lot of money coming and going between vendors, suppliers, subcontractors, payroll they have to make. And if they're not charging enough money, it's possible that they will run out of money. And that's why you have to watch for the red flags when they start asking for a lot of money up front, or they start questioning you, saying, hey, do you mind if I get a check now rather than later? This is a person that's not managing their company properly. And this, again, here's another little secret: asking the referrals that you've received from this contractor before you hire them, and asking a good question there, like, how was the payment process with Fred, the contractor? Did they have a schedule of payments? Did they ask for progress payments intermediate in between those schedule of payments? Did you feel like they were financially stable? That's important to you, because you don't want them disappearing on you. Hey, I've got a quick announcement. I'm building something I'm really excited about called BuildQuest. It's an AI-powered planning assistant named Quinn that guides homeowners through every step of planning their home project, from figuring out your budget to creating your design package to hiring the right professionals. Think of it as having me sitting next to you throughout your entire planning process. We're not launched yet, but if you go to buildquest.co right now, you can reserve your spot to be an early beta tester. Early adopters get special pricing and lifetime benefits. BuildQuest.co, check it out. So that's what the GC overhead is really funding, all of those things I just talked about. So now let's talk about, what if you try to skip all of this? What if you decide, well, I'll just hire the subs myself, cut out the middleman? Let's talk about why that is almost always a costly mistake. All right, here's a scenario that plays out more often than you'd think and that you'll be tempted to do, perhaps. A homeowner gets the GC's bid, sees the markup on the subcontractors, and thinks, wait a minute, if I hire the electrician directly, man, I can skip the GC's markup on that trade. I save money. It's logical. It sounds right. And it can absolutely blow up your project. So here's what that thinking misses. The GC's markup in a subcontractor isn't just a fee for passing along a phone number. It is the cost of the GC's coordination, accountability, and liability for that sub's work, like I just talked about. So when you insert yourself into the GC supply chain, when you hire your own electrician or plumber or tile setter, while the GC is managing the rest, you create a gap in the accountability chain. And that can really snowball on you in a lot of different ways, because now you're going to have a contractor that's going to step back and not really take charge of managing that project. And inevitably, you will have project delays. Materials won't arrive in time. All those kind of critical path elements of a project will start to crumble on you. So unless you have a ton of experience, you should either go one way or another, act as your own general contractor or hire a general contractor. Don't get in the middle. So who's responsible when the timeline of that sub doesn't line up with the GC's schedule? Who's on the hook if that sub's work doesn't pass inspection? Who manages the coordination calls, the change orders, the quality checks? You are. And if you're not prepared for that, it can really create chaos. So my book is very direct about this, and I'll say it the same way. Don't be that meddling homeowner. Interfering in a project managed by a GC causes numerous problems. Now look, if you have strong, valid reasons for handling part of the work yourself, there is a path for that. It's called the owner-builder model, and we'll cover that in future episodes, but doing it casually, thinking you're saving money, that's where things really can go sideways. So here's the mental shift I want you to make. When you pay the GC's markup on a subcontractor, you're not paying for a middleman. You're paying for someone who has vetted that sub, has a working relationship with them, can hold them accountable, can replace them if needed, and carries a liability if their work doesn't meet standards. So you're always going to have, one of my customers used to say, we just want one throat to choke. And that's kind of scared me. And then I realized that you as a homeowner, if you're planning to hire a contractor to do your project, a home builder to do your project, you're going to want to have, the goal of that is to have one person for you to be able to interact with that you have developed a high level of trust with, and you know that you can funnel all your communication through them. And if something doesn't work out, you've got one throat to choke, and that's your general contractor. So it's really not a convenience charge. That's the protection. So and here's something most homeowners don't know. The best subcontractors, the ones with the best track records and reputations, often won't even take a job unless they're working under a GC they trust. So when you try to cut out the middleman, you might find that the best options only come with the package. You can't skip the markup and then keep the accountability with your contractor. It's a package deal. Now, let's zoom out and look at the real numbers, because I think when homeowners understand how thin contractor margins actually are, the whole conversation about markup changes. Now, let's zoom out and look at the real numbers. I went out and did some research on my own to understand what quote-unquote the national standards are, and this is where I'm going to push back on what is being said out there, because I think a lot of the national standards are driven by production home builders, not necessarily upper end residential custom home builders, design build companies. But I'm going to go through this quote unquote industry standard stuff, and then I'm going to argue against myself here. And then we're going to get some people, guests on here the next time and talk about this. So sharing some real world numbers with you based on these statistics, because I think the data tells a story that can completely change how you view contractor pricing. So a lot of homeowners assume that a contractor's markup is largely profit. The reality is it's almost the opposite, like I've mentioned before. So here's where it gets kind of funny. Industry research shows that average pre-tax net profit for general contractor after all overhead is paid is somewhere between 1.4% and 2.4%. That's it. Now, this is where I have a problem, because I don't believe that's true in custom home building and design build companies, mid to upper end, like a lot of my audience is. If I were operating on that thin of a margin, it just doesn't take much to really, frankly, go out of business. So I think what they're talking about is the net profit to the bottom line, which frankly, you don't really care about. What you care about is making sure that you're getting good value and you're getting good service. So they say the Construction Financial Management Association tracks this. So even top performing firms are only earning about 12% net income. Now, that's not bad if it's considered after, you know, the contractor pays themselves. And they end up with 12% net income. And then the National Association of Home Builders found on average about 9% net profit for single family builders. But again, they're talking about production home builders, and that's not really what we're talking about today. But even if you were to look at that, if to put that in perspective, if a GC builds an $800,000 custom home and earns 9% net profit, that's $72,000 for a project that might take 12 months to manage, coordinate, and deliver. It's not outrageous. In a tough year, material costs, labor rates rising, those margins compress even further. But where are those numbers really coming from? Because is that the 9% after they've earned all of their profit on overhead, they've put in, you know, factored in time for themselves to manage the project? It's really hard to say. And again, I'm not sure it really matters, but I thought I would share some of these statistics with you, because it may not be 9%. It might be 12%. It's not 50%, because it might start going up, frankly, as we move on in life here. But the margins are just not that high. And remember, as a general contractor doing custom work, even though they may price a project at X amount, their profit margin does get degraded as they move through a project, because they cannot charge for every single error, mistake, oversight, misestimating, things like that, that they have to absorb. So the smart ones do all the due diligence early on with their planning, with their estimating, in order to be able to provide a realistic budget for you when they provide a proposal. And again, this goes back to the low bidders on the job. Did they do all that? Are they going to be able to deliver everything that has been promised if they're the low bidder? What if they misestimated the amount of flagstone in your walkway? What if they misestimated the amount of time it took to frame your new home? Are they going to come back to you for that extra cost on a fixed price contract? They better not, but a lot of them do. So this is where you got to be really careful, because if a guy is just pricing out a project to get paid wages, we call it, and doesn't put his profit and overhead on it, doesn't put his margins on it in order to operate his business, you could be doomed. So there's also this other phrase out there, you homeowners Googling all over the place. They call it the 10-10 rule. 10% overhead, 10% profit equals 20% total markup baseline. And that's considered a starting point, not a ceiling. Custom home projects often need higher markups to compensate for the complexity and the risk involved. And again, I would argue that if I priced projects out at 10% overhead and 10% profit as an ethical contractor, that assumes a tremendous amount of liability, probably would have gone out of business a long time ago. So I would argue that the really good companies have to go a couple notches above that in order to provide a stellar service. And that's what we're trying to find, is people that provide stellar services. If you go with a low guy, just plan to be miserable and just expect that you're not going to meet your expectations, and just deal with it. And have to deal with it. And then when they're done with the project and they walk off, hire somebody else to finish it. So that's kind of the, that's kind of the idea. Think about it this way. You know, would you ask your surgeon to cut their price before they perform your open heart surgery? Would you tell your mechanic to knock off 15% before they rebuild your engine? Not really. It's probably not the smartest thing to do, right? Because once you do that with a contractor, and there's nothing worse you can do than get six bids, you know, line everybody up, and you know you've got the top two or are the really good companies in town, and then you've got the bottom two that are just, you know, that they're questionable, but you might tolerate it. But then you use those benchmarks to go back to the top companies and try to negotiate with them. There's nothing more that pisses off a reputable contractor than when a homeowner does that. So if you're going to do that, you might as well just go with a low bidder and deal with it. The worst thing you can do is try to negotiate with them and get their price down because of all of these garbage bids that you've got. So You have to decide what type of homeowner you are. You have to decide what's important to you. Just like this sounds like my past episode, but again, we're talking about, I'm kind of bleeding back into that, but this is really, really important. So, you know, of course you're not going to tell your surgeon, your mechanic, because what are they going to do? They're probably going to speed up. They're probably going to hurry up. They're probably going to order cheaper parts. The surgeon might have the junior surgeon do your open heart surgery while they watch and eat bonbons. If you get what I'm drift, you get my drift here. Their mindset changes, right? And it's really because you want these people to be well resourced, focused, and honestly motivated to do their best work, and they want that too. So your home is almost certainly the largest financial investment of your life. Why would you try to squeeze the contractor managing that investment until there's no margin for quality, no buffer for mistakes, no reason for them to prioritize your project? So here's the reality. A contractor who can't make a profit can't really finish your project. And if they fail, you inherit the chaos. An unfinished home, disputes over materials already paid for, the nightmare of finding a new contractor midstream. The cheapest bid is often the most expensive outcome. So here's the bottom line. A contractor markup is not a red flag. It's a sign that you're dealing with a real business that intends to be around long enough to deliver your project. What you should be looking at is whether the markup is reasonable, transparent, and backed by a contractor who can demonstrate their value. So let's talk about exactly how to do that. And another caveat to this is really what's important, especially if you're talking with a fixed price contract and fixed price contractor, I should say, with a fixed price contract, ultimately you don't really care what their profit margin is. What you care about is if they're competitive enough and you like them enough, use them. And from a transparency standpoint, if you were hiring a contractor on a cost-plus contract, or sometimes it's called time and material, then the transparency factor really comes in. But also keep in mind that the liability is really dumped back on you as a homeowner when it takes 3 weeks longer to frame your house and the bills keep coming in. Everybody uses this word transparency, but what it really matters is the value there. And you can get a few estimates in order to determine that. All right, so let's bring all this down to what matters most, you, your project, and how to use this knowledge when you're sitting across from a contractor candidate. First, what does a healthy contractor bid actually look like? A healthy bid is transparent. You should be able to see, at least at a high level, how the costs are structured. Labor, materials, subcontractors, and the equipment. A contractor who is willing to walk you through their pricing approach is a contractor who respects you as an informed client. And again, you could ask them, how do you structure your profit and overhead? Is it a fixed percentage across all cost categories, or does it vary? How do you handle labor? Is that a fixed build rate or an actual cost plus overhead? So that's really important questions to ask, because you may not know in the beginning if they'll be providing cost plus services or fixed price. In either case, you should be looking at a cost breakdown by construction categories so that you can understand where the money goes, which makes you an informed customer that you can then make decisions about things that you may want to change, remove, add, etc. So you can ask them their structure and get a sense of that. But again, I'm not sure it really matters as long as you feel like that you're getting a good value. But the bottom line is, they're not adversarial questions. They're smart ones. And a good contractor will appreciate that you understand the terminology. It signals that you've done your homework. That's actually a quality signal you're sending back to them. So now here are the things that should make you cautious. A bid that has almost no breakdown. Everything is just one big number with no explanation. An extremely low bid that undercuts everyone else by a wide margin. A contractor who gets defensive when you ask about their pricing structure. They are not necessarily deal breakers on their own, but they're signals worth paying attention to. And the more you understand how a contractor pricing works, which you now do, the more clearly you'll be able to read those signals. So one thing I'll mention, and we'll be talking more about this, is BuildQuest. One of the things that we're building into the platform is the ability for homeowners to organize, track, and compare project proposals in a structured way. So when estimates start coming in, you have a framework to make sense of them. And like I've said before, you can get on the beta reservation list at buildquest.co. And I'm looking for a small group of homeowners, contractors, architects, and designers. And it's not just about bidding projects. It's a whole comprehensive planning tool that I'm now really deep into development. And I'm anxious to get some people to test it out in the next few months. So look, understanding how your builder makes a living isn't just interesting, it's kind of protective. It's how you recognize a quality contractor from one who is operating on hope. And it's how you set yourself up for a project where everyone involved is properly compensated and motivated to deliver their best work. All right, so why don't we pull into the garage on this one? Today we went deep on how your general contractor makes a living, covered P&O, profit and overhead, and what those four cost buckets look like. We unpacked burden labor and why a $30 carpenter might legitimately cost you $60 to $100 an hour on your project. We walked through six categories of overhead that the GC's markup on subcontractors and suppliers is funding. We talked about why trying to cut out the GC by hiring your own subs is almost always a losing strategy. And we looked at the real industry data. Contractor margins are thin, and a contractor making a fair profit is a contractor who's going to be around to finish your project. So all this content is drawn directly from my book, The Awakened Homeowner, Options for Hiring Your Team, sections 3.040 through 3.042. And the podcast gives me an opportunity to kind of elaborate on all of that in my own voice. Although I did narrate the book as well, that was a fun exercise. But the book goes deeper on all of this, including how contracts are structured around these cost frameworks. And that's coming up in our series, Contracting Methods, Cost Plus versus Fixed Price. And the book is really the perfect companion. So if you're really just starting to think about a project, and if it's a big project, or your timeline is out still, the book can just kind of be by your side all the way along, and you can grab it and reference it. So you can grab it on Amazon and all the platforms, and I'll drop the links in the notes here. And always, if this episode helped clarify something that's been confusing, or if it shifted your perspective on contractor pricing, I'd love to hear about it. You know, drop me a comment on YouTube, find me on Instagram at The Awakened Homeowner, or shoot me an email directly. This episode, I'm remote this week, so I'm not able to record video. So I just wanted to get the audio. I want to stick with my plan here. So I won't be posting this to YouTube this time, but it looks like the thousands of followers I have now are just listening mostly on podcasts. And I really thank you for doing that. And would love to hear from you if you have some real life stories you'd like to share or topics you'd like me to cover. But the real feedback from real homeowners is what shapes where this content goes next. And if this would help someone you know who's navigating a build or a remodel, please share it. That's how we grow this community. So coming up next, we're going to be moving into a topic a lot of you have been asking about, how to actually estimate your project cost, meaning what is the approach to go out and get estimates on a project? And frankly, what is a project estimate and who creates it? When do you get one and how do you make sense of what you're looking at? And that's next up. So as always, I'm Bill Reed with The Awakened Homeowner. And my mission is to enlighten, empower, and protect you. So let's go out and make it happen. Thanks for tuning into The Awakened Homeowner. Remember, you've got the power to take control of your project from day one. If you're ready to dive deeper, grab The Awakened Homeowner book on Amazon. It's your roadmap to success. Join our community at theawakenedhomeowner.com. And download our free story, The Tale of Two Homeowners. And here's something exciting. I'm developing an app called BuildQuest that's going to revolutionize how you plan and manage your project. Visit buildquest.co to become a founding member and test drive the app when it launches. follow us on social media, and hit that subscribe button. All the links are in the show notes and bio. Got questions? I'd love to hear from you. This is Bill Reed. You got this.